This episode is brought to you by MedBridge Education. Log into medbridgeeducation.com/TNTherapyOutsource. Use the promo code Dr. Mike or alternative to get $200 discount or over 40% off. Gain access to 1,000 plus online courses, compliance training, certification preps, program, and so much more. So again, thank you very much. Enjoy the show. What's going on, Dementia Warriors? This is Dr. Mike Chu again, physical therapist and certified dementia practitioner. And welcome to our Thursday dementia training. Well, first of all, I hope you had a great, Mother's Day weekend last Sunday. You know, happy Mother's Day to everyone. But me and my family, you know, me and my wife, we went out and ate at the local restaurant here, you know, hibachi restaurant, where they cook right in front of you. It's really good, you know, really good. Well, anyway, today is, like what I said, you know, our Thursday dementia training, and we're going to be talking about depression. So let me go ahead. So depression is, you know, 40% of dementia patients, they experience depression. Dementia and depression almost goes hand in hand. So I don't know if you heard the Kubler-Ross stages of grief, you know, the denial, the anger, the bargaining, the depression, and acceptance. You know, some patients, they go through that Kubler-Ross stages of grief. And sometimes those patients, you know, our dementia patients, they get stuck on that depression stage. So, you know, you gotta be aware of it. So, you know, with depression, with dementia, you can't treat, I mean, there's no actual treatment or cure for dementia, but there is a treatment for depression. In that way, we can at least rule out depression and just handle dementia itself. So again, depression is very common among people with Alzheimer's, especially during the early and middle stages. So treatment is available. Like what I said, treatment is available and can make a significant difference in quality of life. Why early and middle stages? Because early and middle stages, because like what I said, that Kubler-Ross, the first two stages there is the denial stage. They will deny that they can still do this and they can still do that, attempt to do what they used to do before, when in fact they can't do it anymore. And then the next stage will be the anger stage, where they're going to be angry with every single thing that, you know, you can't do right, you know, as a caregiver. They're just going to get mad at every single thing. And then they're going to be in that bargaining stage. You know, they'll bargain with you, family member, you know, priest or God or any higher being. And then on the next stage, you know, fourth and fifth is what you call the depression stage. And sometimes the patient gets stuck in that stage. So, especially on that early and middle stages, okay? So, here are the symptoms, some symptoms of depression. So, you really need to identify it first. So, you know, the apathy, you know, there's no feeling, you know, loss of interest in activities and hobbies. They don't want to do anything. And they have this social withdrawal. They isolate themselves, you know, they have trouble concentrating, and obviously they have, impaired thinking, and it looks like dementia, but actually it's depression. So, one day we're going to be also talking about the difference between dementia, depression, and, delirium. So right now we're going to be focusing more on depression. That way, you know, we can do one topic at a time. All right. So these are the symptoms of depression. Apathy. They lose interest. They withdraw themselves socially. They're isolating themselves and they have trouble concentrating and impaired thinking. And in addition, you know, the cognitive impairment, you know, with the patients, with your Alzheimer's patient, it makes them difficult to, you know, tell them and articulate their sadness and hopelessness because they just can't process the information. I had one patient and she said, "I'm just depressed right now, Michael, because I just can't understand what's going on with me." So if we can just treat the depression, at least we rule out one disease and we can just focus more on the dementia process itself. So we really need to identify, are they really depressed? Are they sad? Are they just progressing in their dementia? Okay. And again, depression in Alzheimer's doesn't always look like depression in people without Alzheimer's. So here are some ways that depression in a person with Alzheimer's may be different. So like what it said here, you know, some It doesn't look the same with an Alzheimer's patient. It may be less severe, may not last as long, as symptoms may come and go, and the person with Alzheimer's may be less likely to talk about or attempt suicide because they don't know what's going on really, so they don't know what's really going on. And then as a caregiver, you, us, as a caregiver, if we see signs of depression, we need to talk to this about to our to the primary care doctor of our loved one and our patients, because proper diagnosis and treatment is very important. And the OASIS paperwork that we do, I use a tablet. There's a portion there in home health. This is in home health. When we admit the patient, there's always a form there. Is the patient depressed? Do we need to go to a further screening for depression and stuff like that? And we ask all this long, crazy questions. And sometimes, just asking directly the patient, are you depressed? Are you sad? You'll get an easy answer. Yes, I am. And from there, we refer the patient out to back to the primary care doctor. Hey, this patient doesn't have any diagnosis of depression. What can we do about it? Can we give her any kind of medication, selective serotonin or whatever, antidepressants. So yeah, proper identification, proper diagnosis is very important, because how can you, just like a basketball, how can you shoot something if you don't know where the goal is? And same thing with this one here. We just cannot, bury the depression. It's a real disease. It's a real disease. It's not just psychological. It's chemical reaction going there. Okay. So diagnosing depression, like what it says here, there's no single test or questionnaire to detect depression. There are a lot of questionnaires out there, but the diagnosis requires a thorough evaluation by a medical professional. I don't do dementia, depression diagnosis, but just as a physical therapist, I know when we see if the patient is depressed or not, and because they lack, participation with the therapy, they don't want to go out, they don't want to do exercise, they just want to stay in bed and stay in their chair. So proper referral to a qualified medical professional is very important. In that way, they could identify and see what we can really do. We just had one patient. We discharged the patient. She has a diagnosis of depression, and she's been being managed by medication. And every time we discharge the patient from physical therapy, she intentionally hurts herself by falling, literally falling and hurting herself. Last time I admitted her, she had this, a black eye in her eyes, and she said, "Michael, I want therapy again because I fail." I'm like, "Well, why are you doing this?" Because, she's just depressed. She wants somebody there with her, to do, exercises with her and everything like that. So we really need to be cautious about that. Okay. Here, an evaluation for depression will include, obviously, person's medical history. We need that. A physical and mental examination. An interview of the family member. We need that because, the patient may be able to mask the depression well when they're, in a doctor's, lounge or clinic. When a patient sees a doctor, they dress up. They fit, they put on the good clothes, they put in, they dress up, and then they go to the doctor's clinic, and they know how to mask, and now the doctor doesn't know if this really patient depressed or not. And then when the patient goes home and they're back to their depressed state, they're in that anger mode, they're in that bargaining mode and depressed mode, and the family member's like, "Well, how come you're nice and appreciative and respectful with your doctor? Now, how come when we're home, the patient is just, oh, you're just arguing with me, mom," or something like that. So you need to also interview the family member, especially the POA, all right, the power of attorney. So, because of the complexities involved in diagnosing depression in someone with Alzheimer's, it may be helpful to obviously consult a geriatric psychiatrist who specializes in recognizing and treating depression in older adults. In the nursing home that I go to here in Van Air, not in Van Air, it's connected to Van Air. It's called Unity Martin. They have this really good geriatric psychiatrist, and I read his notes, and it's just amazing how he diagnoses and how he writes down his notes and treats his patients. So it's very important that you refer it to a proper practitioner, proper physician, proper therapist. You know, just like in our field in physical therapy, some therapists are really good with orthopedic. I'm not really good at that. I'm good with, you know, quote unquote dementia. That's my specialty. You know, some patients are really, some therapists are really good when it comes to pain management. Some are don't, you know, some physical therapists, they're really good in sports therapy. You know, I don't, I'm not. And same thing with, you know, a psychiatrist, physician, nurse practitioner. You need to go to a good geriatric practitioner, a gerontologist, you know, a primary care physician that will understand, Alzheimer's or dementia. Okay. So, here, how do you diagnose again? Depression, if two or more of the following symptoms for 2 weeks or longer. So if you got two of these symptoms and it lasts two weeks or longer, you probably need to have a good screening or evaluation for depression. So first is social isolation or withdrawal. Second is disruption in appetite that is not related to any medical condition. You know, sometimes, you know, they're just, you know, they just have an upset stomach, so they don't want to eat. But if this is the case, that it's not related to medical condition, you know, they're not eating or binge eating or whatever. Disruption in sleep. That patient I was talking to you about, that she intentionally just wants to fall and hurt herself. She says she sleeps from 8 in the evening up until 1 in the afternoon, and she doesn't want any visits before 12 in the afternoon. I'm like, well, I thought you wanted physical therapy. No, I want physical therapy, but I want it after, in the after afternoon. So, you know, so she just wants to sleep. So, and then agitation, she's very, you know, patients are just agitated and in that anger stage, and they have this slowed behavior. You know, it's called bradykinesia. They're just slow. They move slow. They think slow, and they just don't want to do anything. Next is irritability. They're just irritated all the time. I think that's me, right? Fatigue or loss of energy. There's no energy because they're not exercising. You know, feeling of worthlessness or hopelessness or inappropriate or excessive guilt in life. You know, they just feel guilty of what's going on in life. And then, you know, thoughts of suicide, death, and, you know, attempted suicide. So if you have, if you yourself as a caregiver, you've got two of this and it's lasting two more weeks, you have to have yourself checked too. You know, it's very important. And same thing with your patients. If you see this, you have to have a good thorough evaluation. Okay? So again, recap: withdrawal or social isolation, not eating well, not sleeping well, you're agitated, you're irritable, you don't have enough energy, you're hopeless, you know, and you feel like you just want to die. I remember, you know, my mom had this, you know, she was depressed, but she wasn't treated, you know, she would be isolated. She would just withdraw herself and just be at home, and she's agitated easily, and she doesn't have any energy. And she always said, oh, I just want to die. And I never realized that she had depression. And, I think I remember they gave her some sort of antidepressant, but, you know, it just got worse. But she died of stroke, so she didn't die of dementia, but she died of stroke or heart attack. So, okay. Again, how do you treat depression? So how do you treat depression? So most common treatment for depression in Alzheimer's involves a combination of, listen to this, medicine, counseling, and gradual connection to activities that people that bring happiness. You just cannot tell that person, hey, cheer up, hey, snap out of it, you know, try harder. That doesn't work. It needs to be a combination of medicine, counseling or coaching and gradual improvement of activities, because that's the only way. You know, you need to have, you know, a chemical reaction, you know, a verbal coaching or counseling, and actual, you know, physical exercise and movement. That's the only way you can treat depression. Okay. If you just give medicine and there's no coaching and counseling and exercise and activities, it's not going to do good. If there's no medicine and you're doing counseling and coaching, and then you're doing exercise, it's not going to do good. So all three of them needs to be there. That's like a three-legged stool. Those three needs to stand. Without one, it will fall. It may work for a while, but it's not going to stand up pretty well. So depressed people with or without Alzheimer's are rarely able to make themselves better. You know, they can't, you know, it's difficult because it's a disease, you know, it's a chemical imbalance in your brain, you know, your chemical, your psychological and your physical, body is not really in sync. So, you really need to have that three component. Okay. So here are some non-drug approaches that you can do. You know, find support groups. You know, find support groups that can help out, bring out the best in that patient. You know, early stage group for people with Alzheimer's who are aware of their diagnosis and prefer to take the active role in seeking help. Counseling is very important. Coaching is very important in that way. You know, that could bring out the best in them. Next is a regular, predictable daily routine like exercise, you know, exercising in the morning to release those endorphins, to release those natural antidepressants in your body when you're exercising and moving. Because when you're exercising and moving, like what I said, you're releasing those certain hormones that will make you happy, like the happy hormones, like the serotonin, you know, the dopamine receptors, and that will improve your function and brain activity. And then next, make a list of activities, people, or places that the person enjoy. You know, obviously you find something that what the person enjoys. If they enjoy walking, let them walk. You know, if they enjoy, you know, beautiful flowers, let them enjoy. If they enjoy shopping, you know, let them shop. So, all right, provided that they have money, okay? Because if they lose money, you know, they're going to be depressed again, right? So, again, you know, here are some more tips. You know, you help the person exercise regularly. You want it in the morning. Why in the morning? Because, you know, your energy is better in the morning than in the afternoon. So you have what you call the sundowning, or sundowners, when in the afternoon they lose their energy already. So, and again, acknowledge the person's frustration or sadness or depression while continuing to express that there's hope and that they will feel better soon. Every time I leave a patient's house, I would say, is there anything else I can do for you? And then, at the end, I will tell them, hey, you're going to be okay. Whether the patient has cancer or stroke or dementia or whatever, I always tell them that you're going to be okay. You know why? Because they're going to be okay right now. I left them with a good vital signs. They had good vital signs. They did exercises with me. They follow my direction and stuff like that. So when I say they're going to be okay for now, they're going to be okay for now. And then next, number three, celebrate small successes. You know, it's not all about the big wins. It's also about the small things that you've done. You know, if they did like one or two steps in walking, that's the win. That's a celebration. Okay, even God himself, he celebrated in small wins. What are the small wins? You know, when he made the heaven and the earth on the first day, he said, let there be light. There was no human being yet. There was no man and woman yet. There was no other creations yet. It's just light. But he said it was good. So celebrate the small successes and, you know, an occasion. And then find ways that the person can contribute to the family life and be sure to recognize his or her contribution. And this is what's going on now, you know, when a patient has dementia or Alzheimer's. We don't include the family member about the decision making. You know, and sometimes we forget that. And I had to learn the hard way, especially in my family life. There was a time that I just did all the decision making for the family, and I just realized, hey, I still need to to ask permission from my parents, from my loved ones, from my mother, from my father, about whether it's a small or big decision. Give them the ways for them to participate. Simple stuff like, what do you want to eat today? What do you want to wear today? What do you want? Where do you want to go today? Stuff like that. And where do you want to eat out? Of course, it just really depends on the stages, but if you let them decide and contribute to the simple stuff, because they still have the feeling to be needed in life. Okay? Again, provide reassurance to the person that is loved. They're respected and appreciated, and as a part of the family, and not just what they can do now. So, all right, and then nurture the person with and offer favorite foods or soothing or inspirational activities, and also reassure the person that he or she will not be abandoned. And this is, I guess, this is one of the most depressing part, having dementia and Alzheimer's. And the reason why they get depressed, because they feel like they've been left out in the nursing home, left out in the assisted living, and nobody's caring for them, nobody's visiting for them. So assure them, that they will not be abandoned, that there are still people who love them and care for them, so. And again, here are the medications to treat depression for Alzheimer's. They call it selective serotonin reuptake inhibitors, so SSRI. You remember I mentioned serotonin. When you exercise, you're releasing a certain hormone in your body called your serotonin and dopamine. Serotonin is a hormone in your body, like what I said, that it gives you a feeling of highness, a feeling of improvement. That's where the Seroquel medication comes from. Seroquel, serotonin. If you notice that's how the pharmaceutical company named it. With regards to the dopamine that comes out in your brain, those are also called receptors. When you're actually what you call this, watching TV or watching a movie or scrolling on your phone, you're getting like a dopamine release there. And when a person who is addicted to drugs, and they say, "Hey man, that's dope," that's because they feel high. So same thing with you. You have a natural hormone that can make you feel high called dopamine. So you got the serotonin reuptake inhibitors. It helps improve, decrease depression, and it's called antidepressant. So, all right. So again, these are our resources. It came from ALZ.org, on how to treat, and take care of dementia. Again, thank you very much for watching our Thursday dementia training. Appreciate you. Again, if you have any question, shoot us a message. We appreciate you. Again, God bless you. Have a great day. Always remember, movement matters to your brain matter. Okay? So again, remember the word FAST. FAST. F is Facebook. Like and subscribe on our Facebook page. Come and join us in our ALZ Prime training and education. It's free for the first month, and then I think it's just $4.99 for the next few months. And that way you can be the best that we can be. There are a lot of people there that will support us, support you, and we still give out, what you call this free Alzheimer's pin for you and for your loved ones. And there's also this card that we give out, urgent medical notice. So again, that's the letter F, Facebook, like and subscribe our page. And next letter A is act. Act. Make sure you act on it. Take action on it. All this stuff that we're teaching you, it's not gonna do us good if you don't take action on it. And letter S, share this page, share this training, share this Thursday dementia training into other pages, other friend, other groups, and that way you can bring out the best in other people too. And last but not the least, letter T is teach it. You gotta learn how to teach this. I won't be able to be called, dementia expert if I don't teach this. So, because when you hear it, you forget. When you see it, you remember. But when you actually teach it, you understand it more. And that's why we call it misunderstanding dementia. So again, God bless you. Be awesome. Be great. Always remember, movement matters to your brain matters. So keep moving. Keep learning. God bless you and have a great day. Bye-bye. Thank you for listening to our show for today. Again, if you need education, you need CEU courses, log in to medbridgeeducation.com/TNTherapyOutsource. Use the promo code Dr. Mike or alternative. Again, thank you very much for watching our show. God bless you. And always remember, movement matters to your brain matter. God bless you and have a great day. Bye-bye.